and the cup or the hat passes round.
So, maybe the rowdy scenes you might expect at a modern late-night comedy club might not be too dissimilar to a crowd gathered around a minstrel 6 centuries ago.
The headlines again. The UN War Crimes Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia has given its final verdict on the conflict almost 30 years after it began. Two former Serbian officials who trained death squads had their sentences extended. A strike by train drivers has brought rail services to a complete halt in parts of the UK. The new head of mental health at England's care watchdog has said he's prepared to close inadequate services which do not improve, whether they're private or in the NHS. The rollout of charging points is failing to match the rise in electric vehicles on UK roads, with experts warning it could undermine efforts to encourage people to switch from fossil fuels. ITV has launched an external review into its handling of an investigation into Philip Schofield's relationship with a young colleague. The England squad for football's Women's World Cup has been announced, with Millie Bright and Lucy Bronze included, despite worries about their fitness. BBC News.
And the news was read by Jane Steele. In just a moment, Paul Merton will be joined by another guest to suggest what should be banished to Room 101. That's next.
On BBC Radio 4.
I've always run away from religion. I can't believe I'm saying it in front of you.
Well, I can assure you I've tried to do it, but without much success, personally.
The Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, in deep conversations with public figures about their inner lives.
I have a lot to say to my Allah.
Guests in the new series include the actor Gabriel Byrne and the singer-songwriter Nick Cave.
Even though I don't call myself a Christian, the idea of God's always felt like a direction.
The Archbishop interviews on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds starts on Sunday afternoon at 1:30.
Now on Radio 4, a conversation of a slightly different nature.
Supposing you had the chance to get rid of some of your worst nightmares, what would they be? My guest is here to persuade me to banish the items on her list to a place where they'll never be seen again. This is Room 101. My guest is an American writer, actor and stand-up who will be familiar to fans of Live at the Apollo, Just a Minute and a Netflix show Too Hot to Handle. Will you please welcome Desiree Birch? Okay, Desiree, welcome to Room 101.
Thank you.
Here is your first choice, illustrated by this.
I've been driving in my car. It don't look much, but I've been far.
I mean, that was a jam. Thank you.
So what is that first subject?
So my first subject is driving in this beautiful, lovely country that has welcomed me with open arms and narrow roads. I don't understand how anyone does it. It is constantly a nightmare. I've lived here for 8 years, and I've driven through all different parts of this country. There's so many aspects of it that are just nightmarish. The whole cheeky thing you do of taking a one-way street and then putting a dash line down it, like two cars are supposed to be able to fit through it. Trust me, I'm never going to talk about driving on the left. I don't care. Do your thing. I know it's all horses and buggies and drawing your sword or whatever. Everybody has their own customs. That's fine. But there's only room for one car to get down that street if you have two sides of parking. I'm sorry. Why are we doing this weird? It's like the only time Britons want to interact with each other is flashing these headlights right here. The rest of the time, no one's talking the rest of the time. And now it's like, you go. No, thanks. You know, the only time they're interacting.
I think that might be applicable more to Londoners.
True.
You will find sort of around Britain that people can be quite talkative.
That is true. I've been to Newcastle before, and they will not stop talking to you.
You just don't know what they're saying.
No.
So London roads go back to Roman times. It rains a lot here, so the roads have obviously shrunk in that time. And as you suggested, most of the roads in London were built for horses and carts.
Uh-huh.
And you've lived in three main places, as far as I'm saying. You've lived in New York, California, and Streatham.
Yeah.
Which is the most exciting of those three?
I mean, it depends on what you mean by excitement. I mean, obviously, New York is the most exciting. I'm going to answer that one legitimately. Although, I mean, they're fast times on Streatham High Road. But yes.
Well, you know what they say about Streatham? So good they named it once.
Yeah. Oh, Oh my! I remember when I first moved there, they had the A23 had this sort of sign that was like the longest high road in Europe. Why would that be a thing you would advertise? Being on the high road is hell. Like being stuck on the A23 is a thing that everyone's like, how did I let this happen to me again? Why am I here?
Well, this is a statistic which may not surprise you. Traffic speed in London is 8 miles an hour on average.
Yes.
Which is exactly what it was in 1900.
So what you're saying is everyone in London should just get a pony.
Now, the other problem is with small roads is that in the last 20 years, cars have increased in width.
That's
by
true.
An average of 17%. Now, the width of a Volkswagen Golf has increased by 40% since it came out in the 70s.
Is this like some new car obesity epidemic that we're going to have to start talking about in the news or something? Okay, so I did drive in New York for quite some time, which is a rare thing to do in New York, but I had to do so for work. And everything there is a one-way street. And I get that it's a grid, and London is just never going to be a grid. It's just... What did they say? They like took a pissed rat and like stuck a paintbrush to his tail and let him draw all the streets out.
You might be surprised to hear that I've never heard that as a saying before.
Literally someone was like, oh yeah, you just stick a paintbrush on a pissed rat and let him draw all the streets out.
But if every street in the UK was one way, we'd all end up in the sea.
Well, obviously, I mean, you can obviously go in a loop and there are A roads that obviously can go both ways, but just those residential ones. But there are times when you are doing the rat run because there's just no other way and everyone is stuck and someone's mounting a hedge on the side of the road so that someone can, and you're like, there just has to be a better way of doing this, right?
When you say they're mounting a hedge, they're still in their car.
Yes. Not just like, hey, you're all here, let me do a show.
Not just frustrated.
Yeah.
I don't think I can put this into Room 101.
Really?
I've driven a motorhome around Britain. And
wow.
I found it sort of relatively easy. So
really?
Yeah, absolutely. You're a big vehicle. Other vehicles will reverse back when they see the size of it.
Fair enough.
Well,
okay, wait a second. One last
okay,
one.
There's three people who are booing.
That's true. Let's start our own country.
I don't think I am going to put this into Room 101.
Fine. Keep driving on the sidewalks. It's fine. No one needs to live. It's cool.
So I'm sorry, Desiree. Driving in the UK is not going into Room 101. I apologize. I'm sorry. But imagine how good you feel when something does go in.
Yes, I can only imagine.
There was only ever one case where nobody got anything into Room 101, and that was Michael Winner. Who was ironically named on that occasion.
Uh-huh.
Okay, here's a sound effect for you now. Desiree, tell us what this is all about.
That is the sound of a particular cell phone ring. And I feel like this has a good shot of going into Room 101, all right? Text message breakups. So if anybody in this room has ever had a relationship ended over a pop-up on your phone, the person who did that deserves to have to drive through Streatham in rush hour.
Before you go any further, because this might be a good opportunity to ask the audience here, have you ever been dumped by text? And judging by some of the mature faces, anyone here ever been dumped by semaphore? Please continue, Desiree.
No smoke signal breakups. Okay.
Why do you feel so strongly about it?
Because I feel like even if you've gone out on three dates with someone and you formed enough of a connection that they are going to say, this is over. And I do feel it's important to say it's over as opposed to just sort of disappearing. I mean, look, if you had one date, it didn't go well. Most people will mutually disappear. But after you've built enough that there's something going on, it's important to just say, you know what? I don't think this is working. And to say so in a forum where that person has the right to be like, you ruined my life. I was already planning our wedding. How could you do this to me? Sob, sob, sob. So that you can witness their tears. They know that their tears were witnessed and they don't have to keep calling you and texting you days and weeks and months later being like, but why? But I don't understand. Because when you have a text message, you only have a very small percentage of communication, right? Mm. So like if someone breaks up with you in the face, it's really easy for that face to become immediately 100% less attractive to you and for you to be like, actually, they were whack to begin with. Goodbye.
I've got some statistics here. A digital marketing company called Simple Texting surveyed 500 millennials And 57% of them admitted to breaking up with someone over a text message. 69% said they'd been on the receiving end of a breakup text before. So did those numbers surprise you?
No, because I think we tend to develop technology and literally think of no ethics about it whatsoever until it becomes a huge problem. And then there are goofy people in Congress who don't even understand what the technology is being like, what's a Finsta? And Mark Zuckerberg's like, okay, this is the dumbest argument I've ever been in my life, you know?
What is a Finsta? Isn't that a cartoon about prehistoric cavemen?
So it's a fake Insta account. Anyway, I'm just saying it has happened to me before. And it was somebody, you know, I'm in my 40s. It was someone who was older than me and a father of two. I mean, I guess if he's a father of two girls, he's just running away from women like a lot in his life.
How long had you had been in a relationship?
I mean, we'd been going out for like a month. Mm-hmm. You know, it was long enough to me that I would have loved for him to say, seems like you're more into this than I am. I'm not feeling it. Gotta go. Whatever it is, even if he was a complete just jerk about the entire thing, it would have been a lot easier than me going, okay, but it seemed like everything was going fine. And now you've had some conversation with yourself in your head that I'm getting the results of, and I'm still trying to process this and understand.
This is a rather cowardly way of breaking up with somebody.
Thank you very much. That's all I'm saying is that all of us are better than this. And when you have to tell someone in the face that you don't like them or it's not going to work or, you know, you just aren't hot for them or whatever, it makes you a stronger person. It makes them a stronger person. Yes. But, you know, like we all got something out of it, even if it was just a chance to grow up.
Here is a couple of text messaging errors, which we got from the internet. Here's the first one. First person, I'm breaking up with you. Second person, you can't exactly break up with me. I'm your wife. I live in your house. First person, sorry, that was meant for someone else. I suppose the opposite of being dumped by text is proposing to someone in public.
Oh, that's another thing that can get straight into room 101.
Yes.
Generally, if anyone ever
men
did that to me.
Doing it, isn't it? Generally, it's men doing the proposing in a public arena.
Basically, they're not going to be able to say no in front of all these people, which is, I mean, what is that? Blackmail, extortion? That's something that's like a crime if it were money, right? But instead, it's romance. So it's seen as romantic. And I just think anyone who forces someone, like gets down on, and everyone goes, and you're like, oh no, you've turned this into a show as opposed to this intimate moment it could have been. So I would agree, both of those could go hand in hand.
Yes.
Right into room 101.
Oh, a round of applause for that. Now this is something which is exists as a video, but of course this is radio. So here's an audio. Here's the sounds of a man who hired a ukulele group to play while he proposed to his girlfriend in a shopping mall.
No!
See if you can tell when she snatches one of the ukuleles and hits him over the head with it.
And I just have one question for you.
Oh, no, no,
I need to. You truly make me the happiest person on earth.
My goodness.
So social media nude technology has allowed people to be cowardly in all sorts of ways. A lot of Twitter employees were actually sacked by tweet. We had a story here in the last year where some P&O ferry workers were sacked by text. Some were asked to go into a room and watch a video in which a man appeared to telling them that they're being sacked.
It's insane. It's just like, no, these are people's lives. Like, you are a part of it, even a small one. Please just show up. Just be here now, even briefly. It means more than you can know.
Dumping someone by text message. I can sense the feeling in the room. Dumping someone by text message is really cowardly. It's definitely going into room 101.
All right. Okay.
Okay, now's your next choice, Desiree. You've chosen what someone would call unsolicited sexting. What would you call it?
What I'm talking about is the unsolicited dick pic. I read a statistic that said like 4 out of 10 people have gotten one. And I was like, I think I've gotten everybody else's. Like only 4 out of 10 people have received an unsolicited dick pic in
their lives? Well, I've got some statistics here. In a survey of 2,000 women in America, 50% said they'd received images of male genitalia. 90% of those said the images were unsolicited. I can't imagine that 10% were solicited. But and over 75% of those were very unhappy to have received them.
Yeah, I mean it's not like you get one and you're like, oh, it's my birthday and Christmas rolled into one. You're mostly like, what is it? Oh, God. And then think about it. It is literally junk mail that you are getting. Right? They're just... Every mailbox is getting one of these. I mean, if your hit rate is high, you're going to get some kind of response. I think that's the mentality behind it. And also just the sort of naughty thought of someone's seen it. I've never had this appendage. It seems like guys are pretty proud having one, want everybody to know about theirs. Or if there's a lady with eyes, maybe she could see it or think about it or something. I don't know. But they seem to be like, ah, gotcha. You know, like it's that like, you know, made you look kind of trick or something.
And you can't get any idea of scale, do you?
Every woman in here, because every woman has gotten the random dick pic where you're like, I have no idea. If there's a hand, then you have some scale. But oftentimes, Paul, there is like a quarter or a banana or a beer can or something next to it, because he was just like, here's the legend of the map of my penis.
I mean, the usual scale in this country is either a double-decker bus or a map of Wales. It's very aggressive, isn't it?
It is. On the aggressive end, it's just sort of like it's flashing. It's like, hey, I know you saw this thing, and I'm getting satisfied on the fact that I know you saw it, and maybe more satisfied on the fact that you were repulsed by it on that far end. But I think somewhere further in toward the center over this side of the spectrum, I think that men, because a lot of them are a lot more visual when it comes to sex and intimacy, think that we're turned on by the same things that they're turned on by. Like, you know, apparently if I just like sent a boob or like squatted over a scanner or something, he'd be like, woohoo, thank you. That's everything I wanted to know about you. But like,
I'm not even sure I know what that means. Is that like a photocopier?
Yes.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Good.
I just am
not
like
some piece of medical equipment.
No, it's like, yeah,
I see you have piles.
If you're trying to attract another guy, then you know, that was the right thing to do, because he's going to be like, yeah, I need to see that before I leave my house to come out, you know, for sure, as like a guarantee. I mean, look, women can be just as basic. Do you know what I mean? Like, we can be just as sort of superficial, but I just think it's like, it's not the prettiest part. It really is. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's, I just feel like I'd love to see your face first. And I think that... Right? When you get them, it's true. You get them unsolicited oftentimes before you've seen this actual human being. And you're like, I'm not going to judge you based on a dick out of context.
That was a great science fiction film, by the way. I mean, yes. I mean, they're not showing much faith in their looks, are they?
Yes. Although one wonders then, because of the age of internet dating, it's like the other tropes of online profiles, like the guy holding up the fish. Is that just a non-dick pic? Like, we could get really sociological about.
You're losing me now. The guy holding up the fish.
Yes. There's a whole thing. If you ask any woman who's, you know, ever done any online dating, she's come across profile after profile of a man holding up a fish. And I don't know if it's like a sort of a Jesus thing or a, yeah, like I can provide for you or something.
So I wonder sort of like, you know, when you get one of these pictures, I mean, do some people frame it, put it on the mantelpiece? And when visitors come round, they say, oh, that's when we were courting.
Yes. Yes.
Well, I'm with you, Desiree. Unsolicited sex and definitely going into room 101. Here we go.
Yeah.
So, to illustrate your next choice, here's a very evocative sound. So that's not a shower.
No,
it's
no.
It's not distant applause. What is it?
That is the sound of bacon frying. Now, I love all forms of bacon. I don't have any qualms with bacon. But I feel like I wish you guys would cook yours more. Thank you for, because some people are like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, it's pink, it's oinking, it's still soft. Like, I don't need a tapeworm. I don't have a photo shoot coming up. I would love to just have this bacon without trichinosis.
There are differences between British bacon and American bacon. British bacon rashers are cut from the loin, which is located in the middle of the pig's back where the meat is leaner. Americans eat what we call streaky bacon, which is pork belly.
So we should have like belly strips or something. It shouldn't call it bacon. Because it's from back, like the bacon back on or something. That's where it came from. So I'm like, so you guys have bacon and we should have, you know, like greasy belly cuts or something American. You know, we'd come up with some name for it and spin it, you know, but like, I like all the forms of bacon. I just want to know it's done.
Okay, well, let's compare cooking methods because we've got, this is British bacon being cooked. We've heard it already, but it goes like this. And here's the American method of cooking bacon.
Hasta la vista, bacon.
So when it's cooked that way, it's like a packet of bacon frazzles, essentially.
I mean, you don't have to. Yeah, it's. I mean, bacon frazzles. This is from a country that eats pork scratchings. I was just like, what? Literally, someone's just like, yeah, we just did that and then ate it. I get it that, you know, you might not want it super well done, but like just cook it. When I have to order bacon, I ask people, I say, burn it, just burn it. Because what that means is that it'll just get a little bit brown and then it'll be cooked. Because normal cooking it is just sort of like warming up your hands like this and going, and then putting it on the plate next to some beans and toast.
I'm not sure the Americans can be trusted with bacon because the Americans have invented baconaise. Baconaise, which is a squeezy sauce made out of mayonnaise with bits of streaky bacon in it.
Oh, that they blended into it. You guys say, I know, everybody's like, Americans think you can just add bacon to anything and make it better. But you can, though. I mean, look, there's mayonnaise and then there's salad cream, whatever the heck that is. So why not baconaise? We've got, you know, chipotle mayo and aioli and all kinds of things you can do with mayo. Throw some bacon there. I once had a coffee with bacon in it and it was delicious.
There's a woman over here who's been very vocal.
And I love you. Thank you.
What is it about bacon, undercooked bacon, as Desiree described it, that you don't like?
Because it catches in your teeth. You can't swallow it. It's just gloopy. It's horrible. It's foul. It should never have been invented.
Oh, my gosh.
Have you ever thought Angel. Of moving to America? Because there, that would be heaven for you. What? Not that I'm suggesting you should, but the problem with you having undercooked bacon could easily be solved by you carrying around a pair of hair crimpers.
But then
portable
I'm...
battery hair crimpers. Just put the bacon in.
I would crimp my own bacon. She would be styling too.
That's a sentence you didn't think you'd be saying today.
No.
Yeah, okay. The British way of cooking bacon goes into room 101.
Yeah. Yes. Just give it 30 more seconds.
Isn't it interesting how quickly an audience turns into a mob?
Yes.
Now, your final choice, Desiree, have a listen to this. People try to put us to death. Okay.
I wanted to talk about my generation, which is Generation X. I'm toward the latter end of woo. Yes, woo. We're very quiet because our parents got divorced when we were young and we're very sad about it. But Generation X, because we were not a large population, we've sort of been sandwiched between baby boomers, who are a lot of people, right? You guys, the baby boomers got here and did like the last of all the like good drugs and the substances. And millennials now
So Generation X, how do you define Generation X? What year have to be born after?
So I was born in 1979. I think Generation X stops at around 1980. Some argue between 80 and 82, 83. And I think you have to be born after 65 to be part of Generation X. Uh-huh. So, you know, they may have been kids they were generally kids in the 70s, definitely in the 80s. But like, you know, millennials now, and I'm not mad at millennials. Like, there would not be an avocado in this whole country if not for millennials. Thank you, millennials. And you fought for all of the rights because you just expected to have them. Whereas we were kind of the generation that was told, hey, work hard, go to school, graduate from college, get a good job, save for your future. In the meantime, all of the rich people dropped out of college at 19 as millennials and invented an app or had a YouTube channel and are gazillionaires. And so there's
not
this,
all of them.
Yes, I know some of you guys will be like retiring with each other in a commune, but that's a very millennial way of like living out life, right? You know, there's this sort of forgetting about the fact that we were the sort of missing link. Like, I feel like Generation X is the generational middle child. And it's just like, everyone's just like, are you actually here? I'm a middle kid. I'm 3 out of 4. And I spent my entire life just being, is anybody gonna care that I'm alive? No, okay, cool. I'll just do my homework and then feed myself and make sure I get to school and sign my own permission forms and go to college.
I don't know if I share this idea that the belonging to a group of people all bound by the same fortunes or misfortunes. I'm not sure. I think there has to be room for your own individual qualities and talents and drive and lack of drive or whatever it might be.
I mean, that's true. But also, I think that there are certain cultural advancements that happen at certain times. And it's hard sort of for instance, conversations about mental health are ubiquitous and happen as they naturally should now. And I think if you were a depressed teenager as a Gen X person, you were simply handed a Smith CD and a packet of cigarettes and told to go, get over it, you little emo baby. And so, you know, oftentimes older generations are jealous of the things that younger generations have because they were part of helping to provide those things by going through what they went through. I just think that currently we kind of still talk about, you know, what affects people who are 60 and over and what affects people who are 30 and under. Nobody cares about the fact that we had pagers so you could have cell phones, and we had Super Mario Brothers, the movie, so you could have The Last of Us. Like, you know, like, we went through some BS so you could have the cool version of the stuff.
Okay, so I've got a list here of the successful people who are technically in Generation X, okay?
Okay.
We've got Nicola Sturgeon, Kylie Minogue, David Tennant, Matt
some
Hancock,
cool people.
Liz Truss.
Some weird, okay.
Elon Musk and Jacob Rees-Mogg.
Okay, good night. It was nice knowing everybody. Never mind, I never said anything. Jesus.
I suppose the worst thing you've had to put up with is being defined by what is regarded to be the epitome of Generation X, which is the American sitcom Friends.
Yes. I can't talk about Friends because I'm in this country. And it's like, if you live in the UK, you have to love Friends and ABBA. Otherwise, you get booted out.
I watched about 10 minutes of Friends. I hated it.
Oh my gosh. Long distance.
I mean, for me, it was because I don't know any of these people. I don't know this type of person. I don't know these beautiful people that are quipping all the time. It didn't seem real or realistic or meant anything to me at all. But why did you not like Friends?
It was entirely unrealistic. It was, you know, I mean, three people in their 20s who live in the same apartment cannot stand each other, much less are they friends with their other neighbors as well. And it was, you know, I mean, it was similar to something like Sex and the City, which at least had the sex part. So that was kind of fun. But it was, you know, it was unrealistic. You're just like, there's no way you're a writer or you're an artist and you live in any place with exposed brick. You cannot afford that. Like, you, I'm sorry. And also it's quite sort of, it's very white. You know, so you're just kind of like, okay, I guess you guys have a lot of money to have made up problems and hang out at a coffee shop all of the time. But like, the rest of us have jobs and live with three other people that we leave passive aggressive notes for on the refrigerator.
Well, I'm going to put the overlooking of Generation X into Room 101 as long as Friends can go with it.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Get him in there real quick. Get him in there.
In the goes.
Yes.
Finally, Desiree, after all the stuff you wanted to get rid of, is there one thing in your life that you absolutely could not live without?
Okay. This is something that has happened in more recent years. What I cannot live without are my noise-canceling headphones. Raise your hand if you don't wear anything when you get on public transportation.
Wait, what do you mean, don't wear anything?
If you don't wear anything in your ears to cover
British,
your ears.
We're British, I happen to let you know.
Yes.
If your ears are naked when you're on public transport.
Do you read books? Do you have any form of distraction? Or do you just sit there observing life and taking it all in like a creep show? I forgot my earphones last week on the way to the gig, and it was pandemonium. People have gotten even crazier since lockdown. And then there was one girl whose battery had clearly died on her phone because she was 20, because she was looking around the train like, let's be honest, a lot of us who are wearing headphones are just doing that so no one says anything to us at all. And sometimes you just want to get home without talking about Donald Trump or the state of the economy or what's happening in America with Joe Biden. And I was just like, I'm not the ambassador. I just need to get to Peckham.
Well,
so
I think that's another great line. You probably thought you were going to say, I'm not the ambassador. I just need to get to Peckham. Ladies and gentlemen, Desiree Birch.
Room 101 was written and presented by Paul Merton, with additional material by John Owen and Suki Webster. It was produced by Richard Wilson. It's a Hatchet production for BBC Radio 4.
And Steph McGovern will be joining Paul next week. We also want to hear from you. That's because the BBC New Comedy Awards are now open. There are heats across the UK and you can enter now. Find out more at bbc.co.uk/newcomedyawards, where you'll also find full terms and conditions and the privacy notice. The entry period closes on Sunday, the 9th of July, 2023, at 11:59 p.m. If you're taking part, good luck.
Discover unique stories.
I think the key to understanding where we are today is to hear these stories from that time, from both sides.
The Holy Land and us are untold stories.
We're able to listen live to something we would never normally be able to hear. The Ocean's Orchestra.
Our changing planet.
Numbers by composers such as Purcell and Playford, banging heads with fiddle tunes, folk songs and sea shanties.
The Alehouse Sessions. Unique stories all in one place, only on the BBC. Watch on iPlayer.
BBC News at 7 o'clock. Boris Johnson's spokesman says the former Prime Minister has handed all his unredacted WhatsApp messages, notebooks and official diaries requested by the public inquiry into COVID-19 to the Cabinet Office. Mr Johnson has called on ministers to urgently disclose the material to the inquiry. The government has until 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon to hand over the documents. ITV says there will be an external review of events carried out by a barrister following the departure of Philip Schofield from its flagship show This Morning. Last week, he revealed that he'd had an affair with a younger member of staff, then lied about it to colleagues. Our media and arts correspondent David Sillitoe has been looking at what ITV has said.
The rumours about a relationship, they say, emerged in late 2019. They investigated and they say both denied the rumours. They say they feel very